My
please.
name is Tracy. I'm a compulsive overeater and a bulimic, and a very occasional participant in this particular meeting, but a member of OA since 2001. I am definitely an atheist or an agnostic. I think I'm an atheist, but I'll tell my story because I've got about 15 minutes, and for 15 minutes, it divides nicely into threes: what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. I've had a very complicated, well, not complicated. I've had a very extreme, I think, relationship with food and metabolism from the get-go. I have almost died from food-related causes 5 times in my life. The first was prenatally. My mother had toxemia. We had toxemia. So I was an induced baby. And I believe that fetuses at a certain stage understand and remember what's going on. I have an adopted child. I believe she was no knew she came out of one body and was handed to another. I believe that I knew that one day it felt safe in there and one day it didn't. And so let's start there. When I was born, within weeks, I was diagnosed as having something known as called celiac. In retrospect, a lot is known about celiac these days. I don't think it was. Celiac's not curable, and I don't have it anymore. But I lived my first 2.5 years on soy milk and bananas. I didn't feel deprived. I didn't know anything else, and I was a reasonably happy kid. Then I was healthy for a few years until, at the age of 6, I came down with extreme allergies, like, go to the hospital, hives. And I was allergic to more foods than I wasn't. I was allergic to about 300 foods. Once again, I didn't eat those. I felt slightly deprived at that point because I was old enough to feel slightly deprived. But those lasted till I was about 12. I had two pharmaceutical allergies as well, and those have remained. Then I was, from 12 to 21, I was okay when I became a type 1 diabetic in the very end of my college years, like the last month of college. And I've been a type 1 diabetic because there is currently no cure for that ever since. So a little more than 50 years. I'm old, I'm 71. And complicated relationship with food. My mother was quite overweight when I was a kid. She probably weighed 75 to 100 pounds more than she should have and than was normal. She lost all of it, really, when I was 10 through Weight Watchers, and she kept it off until she died. She died about 5 years ago, close to 95. I'm not sure if she was a compulsive overeater. I think she was. She talked about food like she was, but she didn't need any program to keep it off. She just managed to keep it off, and she had a lovely life. She was a narcissist, so it was hard to be her kid. But there were people, if you're not the child of a narcissist, they can be funny and charming and wonderful. And the way I describe my childhood, I was raised in New York City. I had lots and lots and lots of stuff to do. Welcome to New York City: museums, theaters, restaurants, parks, everything. I had really good schools and I had really good doctors. And good schools and good doctors are not to be diminished. Those are important things. I didn't get, being loved for who I was, but I was loved for what I could do, and I was reasonably accomplished. So it worked. So that was that. I met a man pretty young. I met my husband, who I'm still married to, when I was 22. Not pretty young, young. I guess I could have been a teenager. I wasn't. And we got married a couple of years later, but we lived together from the months after we met. And he really does not have food issues. So I live with somebody who does not have food issues, but understands mine. So that's what, oh, I barely talked about my compulsion to eat. I ate a lot. When I got home from high school, I would eat half a loaf of bread with butter. And those are the years when I didn't have any metabolic disorders and things like that. Eating made me feel better for the moment. When I sponsor people, and I sponsor a number of people, I frequently say, Yeah, the problem is it does make you feel better. It might be for 10 seconds, but it does make you feel better. And that's the problem. If it didn't make you feel better at all, we probably wouldn't do it. So I had a rather nice life, good career. We had a child. We did lots of stuff. I was a member of various organizations, mostly political, did a whole bunch of stuff. And out of nowhere, kind of, in 1998, my husband got a phone call one day offering him a job in Los Angeles. Somebody who he knew had been offered that job who didn't want to move to LA, but the person said, "I know somebody who'd be good if he's willing to move to LA." So one evening, my husband comes home and says, "Would you consider moving to LA?" Well, the last thing I had ever thought about was wanting to move to LA. But my job, I was a headhunter, and I know good jobs when I hear them. What's the job? He described the job, and I said, "If you get that job, you should take that job." Which of course meant that I would be giving up the significance of my career. I was a big deal in a small pond, and I did the same career when I got to LA, but I didn't know the players. And I left behind all sorts of people I loved and cared about and things I loved and cared about. So surprise, it was a whirlwind courtship. He came out within 4 or 5 weeks. My daughter, who was then 12, and I followed maybe a month later. And I was have to talk about another program because it's my story. I was a marijuana aficionado. I don't know if I was what I'd call a pothead then in New York, but I smoked almost every evening. So I would call it a pothead, but people who are seriously involved in drugs don't do that because it wasn't during the day. But like you come home and have a drink or two, I'd come home and get stoned. And so we got to California and it's illegal and I never made a good connection. Don't ask me how I didn't make a good drug connection in LA. There's plenty of drug connections. But I made casual connections like friends, and they weren't dealers, so I sort of tapped them out within a year or two. But I also knew I had a problem within less than a year, and it took me about 2 years and a few months to get into AA. I tried MA for a while, it wasn't my crowd. I joined AA, I'm a member of AA since March of 2000. Well, you know what? I joined AA and I stopped drinking and smoking, and I want to eat more because God forbid I should live life unanesthetized, right? That's like not good. So there's something I had done haphazardly, no, really, occasionally is a better word, that type 1 diabetics can do, and about 25% of us do it. I've learned since it's called diabulimia. That's my form of bulimia. If you don't take all your insulin, you don't metabolize all your food. It's very simple. You also get very sick. Diabetics before the discovery of insulin used to die within a month or two because you could eat and starve to death. I mean, it's very, that's what I was doing before diagnosis. And I started to do that more often because I started to eat more often. And if I was going to eat, three large cookies, I didn't want to metabolize three large cookies. So, and I wasn't smoking or drinking. So I made myself very, very, very ill doing that. I was in New Hampshire in the summer of 2001. My dog just walked in, so I'm going to stand up and close the door so other people don't get bothered. But I can keep talking. And so I had attack of diabetic ketoacidosis, which is quite sick. And I was in the hospital for almost a week. My dad was with me. My daughter was with me. My husband was back in California working if he couldn't have come to New Hampshire. And then I ended up in the hospital. I'd heard of OA. I had never been to an OA meeting, but I knew it existed. And when I got back, I called up the OA office when you had to call up and not get on the web. And I asked to be mailed a meeting list. And I got a meeting list and I went to my first OA meeting. I don't think it's an accident on Hiroshima Day 2001. August 6, 2001 was my first OA meeting. And I sat down and I was home. I was really home. I mean, there were people in the room who were talking about eating food from the garbage. You go to most places and they don't talk about eating food from the garbage. I mean, I certainly had done that. There were people who were talking about various other things that I could relate to. And what I wanted from OA was obviously serenity around food. But lots of people were describing their abstinence as three meals a day, nothing in between. I would need stuff in between if I needed it for my blood sugar, but that would be the exception. And I wanted three meals a day, nothing in between. I tried that for a number of years. The most I could get was 7 months. And I got 5 months, I got 5 days, I got 3 weeks, I got whatever. And I burned through sponsors for my first few years. The timing here is about 40 seconds or so off. So if I run over, I'm going to allow myself to run over because there were all those intro things. And so I was with a sponsor who's still a friend. So a few of you may know this person. And she looked at me and she said, "Don't you feel like a failure?" I said, "Of course I feel like a failure. How can I not feel like a failure?" She said, "Well, why don't you choose something that you can keep, that you don't think is nothing, that you don't think is ridiculous? I know somebody whose abstinence is going to meetings. I like people. I'm an extrovert. I like going to meetings. So that would not be an abstinence for me." And so the abstinence that I've kept since October 3rd of 2006, and I may have had it before, but I wasn't thinking of it as abstinence. I probably had it before, is a real bulimics abstinence. If I eat it, I metabolize it. Now, I have to let you know that about 95% of the time, I'm also on my food plan, which as a type 1 diabetic is a very low carbohydrate food plan. I don't graze all day, but I graze. Do I eat three meals a day? No, I eat three meals, and if I'm walking by a plate of cheese that's always out of my house, I might take a piece. I might not, but I might. It's stuff like that. And I ended up with a sponsor because, well, I have two sponsors now. That's another story. No time to tell it. But the sponsor I've had for longer, in a way, was the first person I ever heard who was a hardcore bulimic. I heard her on a CD. Remember CDs? They were being sold, and she was a hardcore bulimic who had gotten better. And I said, "Oh, you can do that." I said, "This is good." So I asked her to be my sponsor for probably on every few months for 2 years. And she initially said, "I don't have time," because she didn't. She was busy and had other sponsees. And one day she came up and she said, "I have an opening." I said, "Great." So she's now been my sponsor for about a decade. And she ended up moving out of town and having a very busy life. So I asked somebody else to sponsor me with permission from each of them. So I have two sponsors. And the other one's a guy. I don't think that's a problem. Some people do. And what I don't do is what a lot of you do. I don't report my food. Trust me, as a type 1 diabetic, I am so into what have I eaten, what's going on, blah, blah, blah. I want to think less about food, thank you. I want to think less about food. My new second sponsor, when we first started to work together a year and a half ago, maybe, asked me to report my food, including when I was on an overseas vacation. And so I did it for about 5 weeks, including that vacation. And emailed it to him every day. And I said, "This isn't working for me. I know it works for a lot of people." And OA is my hardest program. OA is my most reality-based program. I can't give up food. I don't give up food. I like food. I like food less than I used to. Hopefully that will stop me. And there we go. And I'm going to raise something quite controversial in my last half minute, but I was technically overweight on the BMI scale, and I have a lot of doctors as type 1 diabetic, various organs, and two of my doctors suggested about 3 months ago that I should lose weight. So I said, I've been trying for 20 years. They both suggested I go on a GLP-1. I then spoke to my diabetic doctor. I said, it's not recommended for type 1 diabetics. He said, I don't know about that. So since early May, I've been in a GLP-1 too, which is helping me lose weight. And I didn't mean to raise a big topic, except that I think that I know that the OA intergroup has now decided it has no opinion about bariatric surgery and GLP-1s. So if it has no opinion, I'm just sharing that part of my life. That is it. Thank you.